have if you're interested in success. And if you're interested in growth, you'll find that process is actually freeing, not limiting. So many of the entrepreneurial types and lifestyle businesses think that not having process is freeing. And frankly, I'm pretty sure the opposite is true.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Without adequate planning, growth could fire back with chaos and confusion. As you navigate each stage of growth or inflection points, you will have an enhanced need to document your processes, to discover bottlenecks, and find areas for improvement. The accounting processes may also differ among manufacturing organizations and across geographies. Understanding these nuances and the need for process documentation will help manage your growth. In today's episode, we have our guest, Randy Johnston from K2 Enterprises, who discusses why process documentation is essential to manage growth. He also touches on different manufacturing organizations and how process changes in these organizations with straightforward examples that anyone could understand without an accounting or manufacturing background. Finally, he touches on some of his secrets on what makes Randy so efficient to be influential in the accounting and ERP community. Let me introduce Randy to you. Randy Johnston, MCS, has been a top-rated speaker in the technology industry for over 40 years. Inducted into the Accounting Hall of Fame in 2011, Randy is listed as a top 25 thought leader in accounting from 2011 to 2020. His influence throughout the accounting profession is highlighted once again this year by being a recipient of the 2020 Accounting Today Top 100 Most Influential People in Accounting World for the 17th consecutive year. Among his many other awards, he holds the honor of being one of the 9 technology stars in the US by Accounting Technology Magazine. Randy writes a monthly column for the CPA Practice Advisor, features for the Journal of Accountancy, and creates articles for both accounting and technology publications, and the author of numerous books. He has started and owns multiple businesses, including K2 Enterprises in Hammond, Louisiana, and Network Management Group Incorporation in Hutchinson, Kansas. NMGI has supported CPA firms for over 30 years and is the largest managed service provider serving the CPA profession in North America. His wife and 4 children enjoy many experiences together, including theater, music, travel, golf, skiing, snorkeling, and model trains. His experience as a college instructor, management and technology consultant, and advisor to the profession will be evident to you in today's presentation. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Randy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, and good day to you and all your listeners.
Okay, it's my pleasure to have you, and I'm super excited to have this conversation because the kind of depth and insight you are going to bring, it's going to be super helpful for our audience. So just to start off, can we start with your personal story and what you are focusing on these days, Randy?
All right, happy to do that. And probably, Sam, because I've been around a long time, the story will get a little long and I'm going to leave out a lot of details. But as it turns out, I've been doing technical work for over 50 years. So I started programming in the early 60s. And that led to covering a lot of the big computers, mainframes and mini computers, as I used to refer to it, IBM and the 7 Dwarfs. So it was IBM and Digital and Burroughs. And I've written code on all those platforms. And that led me down from mini computers into personal computers when they were first being created. So a lot of the people that made the earliest of the personal computers, so Morrow Micro Decision and Osborne and all those guys who have known him for a long time. We wound up doing that and also wound up participating in the evolution then of DOS and Windows and then a lot of accounting software. So I had the good fortune of helping design a number of accounting software products used in North America and around the world today. That really led me over into paperless and then finally into CPA firm software. So today, I normally will tell people that I have infrastructure expertise, including, you know, internet and local area network, and then all these applications. And frankly, because of the relationships, I know most of the CEOs, VP of development, and VP of marketing of most technology companies that you can name. And in that light, it's been a very interesting life. I do a lot of consulting on a regular basis around dominantly North America, but have done work in Dubai and India and in Europe as well. And our primary business is really twofold. I have a business called K2 where we produce continuing professional education in the U.S. and PD in Canada for CPAs. And then the NMGI business is consulting and managed services supporting CPA firms, banks, and healthcare entities 24/7 from Boston to Honolulu. So that's a kind of a short version of what could be a very long story, Sam.
Well, that's a very humble introduction. In fact, I was actually going to move to the next question. But before that, I want to bring one topic that is really important for your intro. So obviously, when I look at your bio and introduction, I cannot see anyone accomplishing what you have done, even though you have had a long journey. So let's talk about some of those awards. Okay, so top 25 accounting influencer for straight up 10 years.
Yes, sir.
How many awards do you have? Please tell me more about the awards and how can one accomplish this much in one life? You tell me.
Well, you know, my wife points out to me, particularly since I've been home during the pandemic, that I don't seem to need as much sleep as she thought I did. I'm fortunate to really operate effectively on 3 or 5 hours of sleep. I know that's not healthy, people tell me, but I've done it for years and years and years. Frankly, from an award perspective, I really go into almost any situation assuming that everybody around me knows more than I do. And I try to listen carefully and then make suggestions based on the experience. So you are correct. You know, I'm on the top 25 thought leaders since 2011. I've been on the Accounting Today top 100 influencers in accounting since 2004 and nominated again this year. So we'll know shortly if I'm included on that list again. I have, you know, outstanding technologists in the United States, and I could keep going on and on and on. But the fact of the matter is, I am honored and humbled by the awards, but it's not like I'm striving to achieve them either. So the bottom line is quite simple, Sam. You know, you always go in just trying to do the best you can to help everybody around you and recognize that what goes around comes around. And I very rarely ask for a favor, but when I do, the people that I've helped in the past are usually more than happy to jump in and assist when I make a request.
Oh my goodness, I would love to help you. I mean, you know, I don't think you have ever asked. I was asking Randy, okay, tell me what your CTA is for this show. And you're like, you know what? I don't really have anything because I know so many people. I don't need CTA. It was so funny, man.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I enjoy it because I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy helping them, you know, solve problems. If I go back to my personal mission statement, which I wrote in the late 70s, as it turns out, haven't modified it much either. It's to help as many people as I can use technology in the way that benefits them the most. That's pretty simple. And, you know, so basically I can listen to a situation and say, all right, based on what you're trying to do, here's the best solutions I know. Here's the best people I know. Do an introduction and party on, and you'll have a pretty good life doing that. So, you know, along the way, those type of philosophies have served me well because, again, you get the opportunity to hang with a lot of really smart people that way. You learn from them. And the next day you can act like you've known it for 40 years and everybody thinks, wow, you know so much stuff. And it's just because I'm kind of like an elephant. I have a pretty good memory, and I never burn a bridge. And again, I'll do anything I can to help people that is legal or moral. I tend to avoid things that I consider to be illegal, and I'm not the moral judge, but I don't really try to assist people very strongly if they're doing things that I would consider unethical.
Yeah, in fact, Amici, when I talk to people who are in top 100 influencer list, I get a very different energy. To be completely honest, when I approached you, obviously our podcast was not even live, and you responded to me right away. You were ready to do the interview, which was phenomenal. I mean, for some people, it might be frightening to approach somebody like Randy. Obviously, you have humongous accomplishment there. The new podcasters who are maybe starting, it could be a frightening experience for them to talk to people like you, people like Sarah Barnes Humphrey. And I don't know if you're connected with her. She is top 100 in supply chain. We did interview with her. There's a lot to learn from her too. So I would highly encourage you to check out her episode. And I'm going to include the link of her episode as part of this one.
Yeah, that sounds great. And so, you know, every part I'm very, very, very pleased with.
Yeah, there's so much to learn from you guys. And I'm blessed that I'm so lucky to have you guys as my guests. So now let's move to the next question about the growth that I really wanted to cover, Randy. So tell me, what is your perspective on growth?
Well, clearly, I'm a bigger pie guy. So I believe that it's not a matter of beating the competition. I think it's a matter of doing the best you can possibly do yourself. And out of that will come new opportunities to serve more. So when I look at growth, I'm looking at how we can serve clients best. And usually I frame it with that thinking in mind. What's services or products that our customers need or want? How can I provide that to them in the most seamless, easiest way possible? Then the next thing that I'm looking at is how I can make the work environment of all my team members the most optimum, the most favorable. In other words, make it a great place to work. And then I will look at the impact to the bottom line. And what I've found through the years is the bottom line tends to take care of itself pretty well when you're taking care of the customers. And, you know, I typically will ask customers where I've got installation work done if they know of other people that I can help, a common referral technique. And, you know, in some cases they say no. In other cases they say, I've got a couple here. And so I'm very consistent about follow-up, and I ask my team to be very consistent about follow-up. If you say you're going to do something, your word should be your bond. You don't need a contract for that. If you say it's so, it should be so. And so that's another element of growth. Now, I probably can give you even more formula along that line, but if you think about your listeners and how, you know, they're focusing on their own operations, you know, if they turn outward facing rather than inward facing, I think they'll find the opportunity to grow as natural. On the other hand, when it comes time for working internally, if you can optimize your processes, that's a big deal too. You know, I know where a lot of your listeners might be in manufacturing, for example. It is clear that process optimization through Six Sigma has changed the way the manufacturing world works. But I'm kind of a process thinker in general. So I use processes in all segments of my personal life and business life. And if you're doing and following really good processes, it makes jobs easier, more repeatable, more scalable, and so forth. So again, we could have another whole conversation about process optimization. And, you know, I've been helping businesses with process automation for 30 years. In fact, that is an area now that I'm enjoying very much with robotic process automation, a technology to really make things happen with less human intervention. So the good news is most accounting software products today, most ERPs have processes in the systems. And when you're going to buy a new system, one of the best things you can do is map your processes and use that gap analysis to select the systems that you're going to implement for the next X years.
Okay, so what would be advice for someone who is trying to map their processes for the first time and they don't know how to be organized. Because mapping the processes sounds easy, but it could be difficult, especially if you don't know how to go from point A to point B.
Well, through the years, I've evolved a process of teaching process mapping that takes about 20 to 30 minutes, maybe 50 minutes max, and enables people to do this. So I'll describe it verbally for your listeners and for you, Sam. And I'm going to talk about it in terms of levels. Because if you think about airplanes that are flying at 30 or 40,000 feet, you know, this super high view, the 40,000 foot view, basically is very broad statements about your processes. Level, you know, the next level down, the 30,000 foot view, gets you a little closer. And then as we go to level three mapping, we start getting into more specific processes. And then at level four, we get very specific around. Now, probably a simple way that you can picture that is all of us deal with processes. I don't know if you're a big breakfast eater or not, or Sam, but most of us know something about how to make breakfast, even if we don't like the meal. There's several of us that will have cold cereal, or we'll have oatmeal, or we'll have, you know, eggs or whatever. And if you picture, you know, a level 1, 2, 3, 4 mapping process of making breakfast, you know, you would have inputs of, let's say, eggs and Canadian bacon and, you know, potatoes and so forth. And maybe your level one map has just the simple statement, make breakfast. And the output might be scrambled eggs or omelets or fried potatoes or cooked bacon, for example. Now, the level two map may be prepare ingredients, cook ingredients, and serve ingredients. And so that's still pretty high level. But if I take you down another level, notice that we could have something about each of the steps of making breakfast. For example, how to make toast or how to cook bacon or how to make eggs. And we could line out the steps on that. So perhaps for making eggs, it might be that you combine the ingredients and prepare them. You stir the ingredients while cooking, and you serve the ingredients on the plate, and I could give you a lot more steps. But the fact of the matter is, combining the ingredients probably requires a level four map, because in that particular case, if someone's never cooked eggs before, perhaps they have to have instruction like, you know, obtain a bowl so you can crack the eggs, and, you know, you need to have X number of eggs per person, and you know, what you put in there. They might not know that you put in salt and pepper. And in our household, we tend to do cream cheese. And, you know, so it's all those detailed steps that we sometimes take for granted. Process maps are the same type of thing. There's high level, level one, and then a little lower level at level two. And again, I call those the 40,000 foot view and the 30,000 foot view. And then you get down to level three, which typically does have a process map, more like a flow chart. And then in level four, you typically will use deployment maps, sometimes called swim lane charts, which really have a similar take, but it talks more about who does it, when they do it, how they do it, and so forth. So fact of the matter is, you can talk through a process by simply asking questions. What do you do first? What's next? What comes after that? And then what happens? And if there's exceptions, you can say, okay, if that happens, then what do you do? All right, then what happens? And so realistically, your process maps are single steps with decision blocks, you know, if-thens or true-falses, only binary or two answers, if you will. And by the time you map that out, you'll have your existing process. If you're trying to improve it, then you might do a 2B chart and define what the new process should be. Now, just simple guidance for your listeners. You know, my NMGI business, by the way, we've had for a few years. But I reduced and simplified my processes this past year down to about 181 processes. In the prior year, I think I was running off of 212 processes. And through the years, we've worked on different things to optimize our processes along the way. For small businesses, it's not unusual to have as many as 150 processes. For manufacturers that I've worked with, we've mapped out nearly 500 processes, 425 in one client's case I'm thinking about, and we simplified their processes down to 350. But still, that's a lot of process maps. It's a lot of things to maintain. But when we optimized the process maps, exceptions, faults, errors were reduced, and the processes were simplified, and we could implement those inside the accounting software too.
Interesting perspective. And I'm curious now, because I don't know how many manufacturers or distributors, especially in the lifestyle business, and the way some of the guests have defined the lifestyle business is anything below $25 million. And this is, I guess, some guest like Jim Gitney talking about this. He talks about the inflection points. There is another guest who's coming on the show. His name is Nick Jackson. He talks about lifestyle business as well. So I don't know how many lifestyle businesses would actually have their processes documented. And I can see so much value in documenting that, because that's how you will get to know if you have an opportunity for improvement. So what would be your advice to businesses that don't document their processes at all?
Yeah, this is a very simple piece of advice, Sam. If it's not in writing, it doesn't exist. If you think you've got a process and it's not documented, you probably don't have a process. Further, you can't teach a process to somebody else if it isn't documented in some form. So on lifestyle businesses, you know, a lot of times people think, well, you know, we just kind of are loose and respond and so forth. And again, I know a lot of lifestyle businesses, but if you want to simplify your lifestyle business, that's when you document your processes, because you realize that you have to work a lot less hard. So maybe this would be another way to say it. You want to work hard? Don't document your processes. You want to work easier? Document your processes. And I have learned in process mapping over the last few decades that the fact of the matter is, if you're delivering a great client deliverable, there's a lot of process behind it. And the laziest person often will find the easiest way to get the job done. So don't criticize people that look like they're being lazy. They're probably just being super efficient, as long as they're always delivering a consistent product or service. And if you think about shipping companies and the logistics of moving product, and we'll just pick on the big boys here, the FedExes and the Airbornes and the UPSs and those type of package delivery companies all over the globe, their processes are very tight and very optimized. And if we take another big distributor like Amazon, you know, they've refined the processes in their warehouses, the last report I know, 21 times. And today they're trying to use more robotics in those warehouses. Unfortunately, in warehouses where they're using robotics, the injury rates are higher because the people are having to work faster to keep up with the robots. And so, you know, they're reflecting on those processes. But now let's take it all the way back down to the smallest of small. You know, if you're running a little home Etsy business, for example, you know, you're going to receive orders and you're going to have to ship orders. How do you optimize your shipping processes? How do you package things so they're not damaged? I mean, if you just start thinking about it, you're going to realize pretty quickly you've got processes. And I know this is really a business podcast, but the fact of the matter is, think about your personal life. You have processes that you do every day, and you do those processes over and over again. And if you begin to become a process thinker and you optimize your processes, you can realize life's a lot easier when I have an optimized process and I waste a lot less time.
Yeah, could not agree more with that assessment, to be honest. I mean, documenting does help, because that actually helps with reflection. And if you don't know what is going on in your processes, and if you are never going to document it, it's going to be tough. And especially if you have multiple people in the team who are collaborating on the same process, they are probably going to define the process the way it feels comfortable for them. So you are never going to have sort of the centralized process overview. And because of that, there could be a lot of issues.
A lot of issues. You'll have drop balls. You'll have contingencies. You won't have a team effort. You'll have a bunch of individuals. You know, I don't know if you're much of a sports fan, but just think about the concept of a team versus individuals. And you know, in most team sports, if there's a superstar, unless they know how to play as a team, that team isn't going to be successful. So, you know, this business is in that light a bit of a team sport. And yes, you can have individual sports. Let's just pick on golf as an example. But the fact of the matter is that even for an individual sport like golf, there's a lot of team players that make it possible. It's not like you go out. I mean, how many of you manufacture your own balls for any sport? I'm thinking not. You know, you might make your own arrows if you're an archer. You might make your own darts if you throw darts. But most of us don't manufacture our own soccer balls, for example. It's just not what we do. So, you know, that's a little bit of strain there. But I do believe if you're interested in success and if you're interested in growth, you'll find that process is actually freeing, not limiting. So many of the entrepreneurial types and lifestyle businesses think that not having process is freeing. And frankly, I'm pretty sure the opposite is true.
Okay, amazing. And I actually wanted to talk in a bit detail there with the examples that you gave. They are so exciting. I wish I could talk, for much longer on that topic. But we want to make sure we are covering the other important topic as well that we wanted to cover. So I know that we wanted to cover the different manufacturing types and how the process is going to vary in those manufacturing styles. And also, you mentioned that geography is also important from the process perspective. So how Northeast is going to be different from the West. So would you like to talk about those two topics?
Yes, Sam. So let's pick that up. And for manufacturing style businesses, there's a spectrum of manufacturing styles. Most experts claim that there's 7 different styles, and that ranges all the way from discrete manufacturing on one end to continuous processing or continuous manufacturing on the other end. If you back up just a little bit, batch processing would be, a more limited style of continuous. And if you step through from discrete, you're going to find made to order, make to stock, and so on. Now, it turns out that there are products that are made to satisfy these different segments. So there are products whose original design basis was for discrete manufacturing. There are some that were made for batch manufacturing. There are some that were truly made for continuous or process manufacturing. And, if you're going to buy products, you need to match the product to the style of manufacturing that you have. So let's use as an example the Milwaukee area or down into Indiana or Ohio or up into Toronto, you kind of the center part of Canada in the U.S. This traditional heavy manufacturing, some people call it the Rust Belt because it's been around so long and some of the manufacturing facilities have deteriorated. There's a lot of capability that's been done there and a lot of very innovative work in manufacturing has occurred there. So, if you think about car manufacturers, and as an example, and your listeners may not know, but I'm from Kansas, which is the center part of the U.S. Over in Wichita, most of the general aircraft companies have bases there. So Learjet and Boeing and Beech and Cessna and so on. So there's a lot of aircraft manufacturing. And in Wichita alone, there's a little over 200 machine shops that support the Boeing operation, the 737 fuselage operation there. The same thing has happened over in Charleston with the 787 Dreamliner. In Charleston, there were not that many machine shops to support aircraft, but once Boeing set their plant up there, again, there's 200 plus job shops. Well, across the Midwest, if you will, there are hundreds, I would probably venture to say thousands of job shops that do particular functions for these various large-scale manufacturing operations. And each of those job shops actually do, most likely, make-to-order or other types of operations. And so the scale that's involved here also determines the size or type of manufacturing software you might buy. So on my website, which is accountingsoftwareworld.com, and I have maintained that accounting software site for 35 plus years at this point, because I actually created it before the internet was very popular. And then it got a lot easier by the time we hit the 90s and we started seeing a lot more of the web browsers and things like that. But, I have a model of a pyramid that describes 5 tiers of accounting software. I lay a number of tier 1 through tier 5. So tier 1 is enterprise. Tier 2 is large SMBs, and tier 3, 4, and 5, same type of deal. And my rule of thumb is if you're smaller, you're probably going to use a tier 5 product. That'll probably handle you up to 1, maybe as much as $5 million in revenue. A tier 4 product is likely to get you from 1, maybe up to $50 million, maybe as little as $10 million. the tier three class products will tend to do 10 to 100 million, and the tier two products will tend to do 100 million up to a billion, and then a billion plus. So it is quite normal that we could look at products that fit at different tiers, and I'll call a few by name, Exact or Acumatica or Epicor or Open Systems or McCola or JobBoss or Deltek or Cispro. And, you know, each of these different types of products have different capabilities. And when you get up into upper tier two and tier one, that's where you get your M4s and your SAPs and Oracles. So the real question is, how big are you today? How big would you like to be? How big do you think you'll get over the next 10 years? Because generally, if you implement a manufacturing or an accounting software product correctly, you'll be able to use it for upwards of 10 years. And frankly, the only reason I switch at the end of 10 years is for technology advancements if the accounting vendor does not keep up. Now, Sam, I think the second part of your question was about style difference. So in that particular case, notice that the way we do business in the Midwest versus the way we do it in the East or the West, or for that matter, the South and North, in other words, the various areas, there's a bit of culture around that. And, you know, in some areas of the country, you have very legalistic contract compliance that has to be done. In other areas, it's much more of a handshake style of business. In other cases, it's a relationship style of business. Now, business is competitive, and I don't know that some of the relationships are honored as much as they may have been in the past. But the fact of the matter is, if you're trying to grow your business, you should be able to make a relationship. And remember that if you meet or exceed what you say you're going to do, you're more likely to be invited back. So the way I usually talk about that is I like to underpromise and overperform. So you want to go beyond what the client expected. And some would argue, well, that means you've got excess cost and you're, you know, throwing extra labor or material in a way that you shouldn't. And I would argue the opposite. What you're doing is you're delivering a higher value product or a higher value service, and you're less likely to be offset by your competition. So, you know, if in fact it's an all-out bidding war, perhaps you're not in the right segment, because if you have very specialized capability or you can evolve and develop that, you'll wind up with a niche market. And I'd like for you to think about, what's your specialty? What do you like to do? Is it something you're passionate about? How do you grow that? So I'm actually picturing three different manufacturers for our conversation. I'm not going to name them, but I can see that your listeners use all three of these manufacturers' products because they dominate their market share. And I believe it would be impossible for your listeners to not be using their products, but you probably don't even know that they exist because they're large-scale manufacturing that fit in the supply chain in products that I think all of us use. And that's kind of interesting, because if I'd start naming them, you would most likely never have heard of them. But how did they get there? They focused in a single area. They got better and better at it, and they continue to just dominate the market. In a few cases, they've made acquisitions of competitors, but in most cases, they've grown their businesses organically, and they do not have significant competitors, and they just continue to fly under the radar, making exceptionally good profits, running a very interesting, well, use your earlier words, lifestyle business. It just happens to be a big lifestyle business.
That's an amazing story, and I wish I could check them, to be honest. That's going to be so inspiring to know about a company that we don't know, but we are using their products on a daily basis.
Yep. As a matter of fact, I can guarantee it, and it'll be an interesting conversation. But even as I was describing that, I'm actually picturing another three or four or five providers that are in different parts of the U.S. market that, you know, I got the privilege of meeting them because I taught their CFO continuing professional education. And then they pulled me in to introduce me to the business and to help optimize it. And it's like, wow, this is a really fascinating business. I didn't know you guys existed. And then when I realize what their sales volumes are and their margins are, it's like, wow, this is a very interesting business. And again, I would just say for one example in Texas, I can almost guarantee every one of you are using products that have been handled by that particular business. But it's a relatively small operation and very interesting setup. And because it's non-disclosure, I can't tell you what all it is, but it's like, this is very, very cool. I didn't even know such a thing existed until I was invited in the door.
Yeah. And the beauty of, podcasting is that we get to know a lot of businesses and a lot of guests, and I would not have known them if it were not for podcasting. So I love this. On that note, I think, we are about the time right now. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts?
Well, I know a lot of your listeners are interested in growth. And with that in mind, I would suggest that you're very clear about setting your goals. That's very common advice. But when you set your goals, do make sure that you're very passionate about what you're choosing to do. See, some can take a hobby and turn it into a business. And the fact of the matter is, the goal is not to make tons and tons of money, in my mind. The goal is to do something that you love so dearly, you would do it without getting paid for it, and that you do it so well that people are glad to pay you for your expertise, products, and offerings. And so be thoughtful about it. It may take you a while to come up with that, but listen to your potential customers, listen to your gut or heart, depending on which way you want to say that. And I think you'll find a new opportunity because new products are being developed all the time. And the opportunity is great, whether it's local, national, or global. And you may be one of the next big players in the market, even though today it's just a sparkle in your eye and an idea in your mind. So create it and share it with others.
Okay, amazing. That is such a beautiful advice. And I'm so lucky to have you, Randy, on our show. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleased to do it, Sam. And I wish you and all of your listeners ongoing success and good health.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Randy, please visit randyjohnson.com, accountingsoftwareworld.com, nmgi.com, or k2e.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Brian Goffenberg from Vital Hub, who touches on the differences between accounting in a public and private company and why auditing is essential for most companies. Also, the interview with Wayne Sannin, who brings a unique perspective on why business processes are more important for growth than individual business systems. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.